Bruckner, the giant. In the field of music, a giant can be defined as someone who towers above others and is eminent in achievements and importance. The composer Anton Bruckner is worthy of this description. My own devotion to Anton Bruckner may seem a bit unusual, but it makes actually perfect sense, for Bruckner and I are compatriots. Both of us were born and raised in the area of Linz, a northern Austrian city located on the Danube River. Linz is known in the musical world as the Bruckner City. The region is full of reminders of the composer's life and comprises a Bruckner environment. The concert hall in Linz is named, what else? The Bruckner House. And nearby is one of the most beautiful examples of Baroque architecture in Europe, the Monastery of Sankt Florian. Bruckner was organist there, and his remains are buried there. Anton Bruckner. His life and his music. You are listening to the sound of the organ in the church of the Monastery of Sankt Florian. In the musical ascent of Anton Bruckner, the organ was one of the building blocks that led to his greatness. Bruckner's first contact with music began in the village church, where his father played the organ on Sundays and holidays. The organ came to be Anton Bruckner's favorite instrument. He became later the organist in St. Florian, then cathedral organist in Linz, and finally the Austrian Emperor's court organist in Vienna. He was so famous that he was asked to play on more than 60 different organs in Europe. Among them, those in the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris and in the Crystal Palace in London. A second building block in Bruckner's unfolding as a man of music was his religion and his love of God. He was brought up in a religious home and in a village of churchgoers. When his father died, he became a resident choir boy at the Monastery of Sankt Florian. The years in this devotional environment were decisive for Bruckner's spiritual attitudes. No wonder, then, that Bruckner's first compositions were not secular, but church music. Even later in life, at the time when he worked on his seventh symphony, he composed the Te Deum, which Bruckner himself considered his best work in praise of the Lord.
Thank you.
Anton Bruckner never attended a higher school of music, and yet he was awarded an honorary doctorate by the University of Vienna for his achievement in the field of music. This points to another building stone in Bruckner's ascent, his passion to learn and his ambition to bring his musical knowledge to absolute perfection. Of course, besides being greatly self-taught, two private teachers enriched his knowledge tremendously. Simon Sechter in Vienna taught him theory, harmony, and counterpoint, and Otto Kitzler, a Kapellmeister, a conductor in Linz, introduced him to the new music, which was at that time Richard Wagner's operatic works. Music of Richard Wagner, with its innovative orchestration and expressiveness, impressed Bruckner so much that he decided to write symphonies. The first performance of Bruckner's Symphony No. 1 took place in Linz in the so-called Redoutensaal, in English, Masked Ball Hall, because the annual event of a masked ball during the carnival season was held there. I have some sentimental feelings about the stage in this hall, because on the same stage where Bruckner had conducted the first symphony about 115 years ago, I, as a young student, performed as an actor in some plays. The premiere of the first symphony was not without problems. There were not enough musicians for the required large orchestra, and needed brass had to be drawn from a nearby stationed military band. And only a sparse audience on a Sunday afternoon came to listen. The reason was that the people of Linz were preoccupied with a local disaster, the bridge over the river Danube that flows through Linz had collapsed the day before. They all had to see that caved-in bridge in the water, and only few came to the concert. We will hear now a portion of the scherzo from the first symphony. The Austrian folk dance has strongly influenced Bruckner and Marder in writing their scherzos, and the scherzo from the first symphony is a prime example to reflect the Austrian dance called Landler, the forerunner to the more refined waltz. The dancers trample at times with heavy shoes on the floor and make a lot of noise. Bruckner does it symphonically. Another contribution to Bruckner's inspirations was made by the beautiful Austrian countryside. Bruckner often hiked from village to village, following the paths of little brooks with trees and birds all around him. He remembered these lovely landscapes and the sound of nature in his music. An example is the scherzo from the Fourth Symphony. Bruckner sketches a hunting day with fanfares of hunting horns and their echoes. Bruckner named the Fourth Symphony the Romantic. Recognition began with the huge success of his Seventh Symphony, real triumph for him. Its first performance in Leipzig brought 15 minutes of applause, and Bruckner appeared on the stage to respond to the unexpected ovation. A few years later, a performance in Vienna was attended by Johann Strauss, the Waltz King, and he sent Bruckner a telegram with the words, "I'm deeply moved. It was one of my strongest impressions in my life." The Adagio from the Seventh Symphony can be considered a memorial to Richard Wagner, whom Bruckner greatly admired. Bruckner wrote to a friend, "One day I came home and felt very sad. I thought it would be impossible for Richard Wagner to live much longer. And at that time, the Adagio came to me." While the First Symphony had been written in Linz, all others were mainly composed in Vienna, where Bruckner had succeeded his former teacher, Simon Sechter, as a lecturer. Vienna, the capital of the Austrian Empire, was an unaccustomed environment for Bruckner, who came from farming country and from the provincial town of Linz. But Bruckner was already in his 40s, and he did not change his ways. He spoke with a heavy regional dialect, which became a magnet for his students who enjoyed his funny language. He dressed in oversized pants and shapeless jackets and cut his hair close, so the mode was long hair and a beard. The sight of the fair sex seems to have been always a source of happiness to him, and he fell in love once in a while with girls of much younger age who would not take him serious. Of course, his religious belief and upbringing precluded any other intent but marriage. Even when he was 71, a chambermaid in a Berlin hotel impressed him as a possible bride. I happen to own a calling card of Anton Bruckner, on which he wrote her name and address. In fact, he corresponded with her. Tonight, you're going to hear Bruckner's Ninth Symphony. When Bruckner died, he left about two-thirds of the finale in orchestral arrangements. Even on the day when death came, on the 11th of October, 1896, he worked on sketches. A few years before, he had told a friend, "I have done my duty on earth. I did what I could. And I only wish that I be allowed to complete my Ninth Symphony." This hope was not to be fulfilled on Bruckner's part. The more we are grateful to William Kerrigan that the Ninth can be enjoyed tonight as a four-movement symphony, as Bruckner had intended it to be. Bruckner dedicated his Ninth Symphony, Dem Lieben Gott, to the good Lord. Bruno Walter once stated, quote, "A firm consciousness of God that knew no wavering filled Bruckner's heart. Not only his masses, his Te Deum, his devotional choral works, but his symphonies also sprang from the fundamental feeling that swayed Bruckner's entire spirit." End of quote. If Beethoven, by setting Schiller's Ode to Joy to music, calls for a victory of mankind, Bruckner manifested in his symphonies a triumph of his belief in God. We're listening to the Adagio from the Eighth Symphony by Anton Bruckner, recorded by the Los Angeles Philharmonic under Zubin Mehta. It is a masterpiece which ranks with the best of Beethoven and Brahms. He chose Bruckner in all his greatness, Bruckner the giant. It is a meditation looking to another world. Mm-hmm. Anton Bruckner, his life and his music deserve a few words about music itself. An unknown poet has left us with these thoughts. I am music. I am music, most ancient of the arts. I'm more than ancient, I'm eternal. Even before life commenced upon this earth, I was here in the winds and in the waves. When the first trees and flowers and grasses appeared, I was among them. And when men came, I at once became the most delicate, most subtle, and most powerful medium for the expression of men's emotions. In all ages, I have inspired men with hope, kindled their love, given a voice to their joys, cheered them on to bravery, and soothe them in times of despair. I have played a great part in the drama of life. Through my influence, human nature has been uplifted, sweetened, and refined. And with the aid of men, I have become a fine art. I have myriads of voices and instruments. I'm in the hearts of all men and on their tongues, in all lands and among all peoples. The ignorant and the unlettered know me not less than the rich and learned. For I speak to all men in a language that all can understand. Even the deaf can hear me, if they but listen to the voices of their own souls. I am the food of love. I have taught men gentleness and peace, and I have led them onward to heroic deeds. I comfort the lonely, and I harmonize the discord of crowds. I am a necessity to all men. I am music.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your kind attention.